Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we're going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
All right, so Marco, what do you think? I know some folks have to leave early. I don't want to keep Scott on waiting. Nothing. So maybe we just dig in. Chris comes back. Cody gets on when he does. Free for all.
Did you guys like take a pause or something, or what?
No, we started at the top. We just haven't started. Really.
Took a nap. Hola. Took a nap of 2 minutes between the one podcast and this. Didn't work. So, all right. The idea here is as we're getting through the new year. Apart from doing the holiday episode, we wanted to do something a little festive and fun with this. And so we had the idea of exploring that the vintage of today was the novelty of yesterday. So gadgets and technology from the 60s, not the 60s, but 70s, 80s, and 90s that could touch on early modem computers, Walkman, and fun stuff. And the idea is to then ask the question eventually, are kids today in 30 years from now or 40 years from now are going to look back at the iPhone 12 and be like, damn, vintage? Or are we at a point where are we going to invent new gadgets? Are we going to invent new novelty that, there you go. Or like, you know, the Nintendo, the Game Boy, or whatever you guys have in your mind of memories of maybe when we were a teenager or kids, that was like the novelties of the days.
iPods, yeah.
20 gig. That's the 20 gig one. So God knows what series that is. That's 160 gig one.
I have a YouTube version that's black and red somewhere in a drawer.
Nice.
So the values of exchange of yesterday's gadgets, what's the value today?
Exactly.
I mean, maybe when you were a kid, they would have, you know, done something really, really on the borderline of legal to get your hands on the newest gadget.
Oh, yeah.
And back then, I don't want to date anybody here, of course, because, you know, why would we know how cool was a Walkman when it came out or anything like that, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Let's talk about that. And
yeah, and
let's start with that, Chris.
That was my first computer.
So this,
your first, tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. That was my first computer, ZX81.
Too blurry to see it, but that's what that is. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was the first computer I started fucking around on. I was at boarding school. I was 10 years old at boarding school, and that was the first system I got into trouble with.
I don't know if I'm older or whatever, but mine was a Wang with an orange monitor. I always remember the orange writing. About this big, and man, it was, I didn't understand what I had to do, but my mom used to write down commands for me and stuff, and I would do them and hit enter and watch what came back. I'm like, I did that? It used to blow my mind. I was pretty little at the time.
Well, Scott, you'll appreciate this. I had a VTech. And it was programmable, and it was mostly for games, but it had a programming feature, and you could program music. Funny enough, so that's what I used it for.
Yeah.
Did certain commands, and it would make sounds and music and stuff. It was kind of fun.
So I helped build a Heathkit, and then I think it was CPM was running, and then a TRS-80.
High class.
I gotta use my phone. So I had an old modem coupler, so you actually dial in on your phone and then you like jam it into the modem coupler, connect to like DAX PB10s and 11s.
I have seen movies with that.
A gillion of them.
Yeah.
Most kids don't know about that, Dan, unless they've seen Hackers, and then maybe they do. That's about it.
had mine confiscated. Mine got taken away by the police.
Oh, we're not going to go in detail. Maybe that will be in another episode.
Yeah, maybe.
We're supposed to focus on toys, not hacker tools, or is that the same thing?
Right.
Lamora, did you have an early computer?
I did, but you know, how early really was it? I was 12. I was 1988, and it wasn't that early, you know. Like, but what I did do is I said, you know, I got to learn this DOS system, and I started teaching myself, and that was really cool. So that's my earliest experience with it.
So I know that we have probably the less technical person here, and I was spending more time, I guess, when I was a kid with music stuff, like stereo system and equalizer. For me, that was the technology. Hey, Cody.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome. We're talking about early technology or the stuff that we liked back then. So we'll get you in it. So the passion may be about computers in your case, but as kids, it was probably not just that. So what was like the fun thing that the thing that blew your mind maybe as a piece of technology, like this is the future, Scott?
Well, I didn't know if Cody had an early computer story too that we wanted to ask about.
We can.
Tell my wife.
No, I don't want to hear Cody's story.
What kind of early stories are we telling here?
Your first computer or your first technology?
First computer. Well, it was one of two things. I'll go with the one that's true because I had a Commodore VIC-20, but I used that after this other one. It was an Epson. I don't know what the thing was. It was something my dad bought for like word processing. And it ran Valdocs, which was, I think, the document word processing, whatever. And the first thing I ever did was playing with it was doing pie charts. That was the only graphics that it had on it because it was just green text on a black screen, but you could do green pie charts. And I thought, oh, that's so cool, being able to make circles and pull out wedges of that. So anyway, that's my first real experience. And then I had the VIC-20. You know, you can play video games and code in BASIC on it. So anyway, there you go.
Like, that brings back a really good thing. Do you guys, or how many of you remember installing WYSIWYG into like Lotus Notes Excel? And you took this box standard freaking sheet and all of a sudden amazing things started to actually happen. That was definitely one of those turning points when you go from like, uh-oh, to woohoo. Yeah.
And
When it wasn't just letters on a black screen, but actually you started viewing things, like it just stimulating another area of your head. So going in another area of your head, Scott, tell me the Walkman story.
All right, so we all like our Walkmans, right? And we all have different ones. And the first one I had was when I lived in the Caribbean, in the Dominican Republic in the mid-late 80s. And I was the first and only kid on that island, I swear to God, with a Walkman. And you would walk down the streets and nobody knew what I was doing. They didn't even know what is the wire. That, even that was mind blowing, right? And then if I put an earbud in somebody's ear and they could hear, first of all, every time I took it to school, I couldn't go anywhere without somebody else wanting the other earbud. So here I was, you know, walking around the campus. Anyway, I was a soccer player at the time too, and I went through a kind of a destructive phase that we kind of all go through as hackers, where you're trying to break everything and see if it still holds up or if you can make it better. So for some reason, I started figuring out that the boots I used to wear, which are Doc Martens, that I could hacky sack my sports Walkman because it would hold up. And so we would get into hacky sack circles and kick my Walkman around through the air. And the rule was, don't let it touch the ground. And if it does, we're done. It always touched the ground, and that thing held up for at least a year and a half before every part on it that had broke, like the cover was off, the little rubber gasket thing was off, all that stuff was broken. But for some reason, I don't know why I didn't appreciate my Walkman enough to not hacky sack with it, but it's because I always had it with me, and it was like a cool trick, bro, a hack circle. Anyway, and then when you're done, you could like put on your headphones and walk out like you're super cool, you know what I mean? Like it was
It's funny.
A lot of trust in your friends that they're good hacky sack players.
Did you have that big one? Because I remember going, I remember in the UK, you'd walk into the shop and they had them like placed strategically around. They looked amazing, but they also had these freaking robust ones. There was this big yellow one that had like all the
knobs. The gray with the gray big.
Yeah.
That was the sport version, I think. Yeah. It was more durable. That's probably what you should have used.
Two flavors. Around. Regular and sport.
So it had to close it, like, you know, in the same era, like in the late 90s, you could buy these really sexy thin ones that were like aluminum, and the cassette was partially hanging out.
That's what I had.
Those sounded really good. You remember those?
Yeah.
This was not that. I mean, this one you'd actually have to kind of put your foot on it to pry the latch open to get the latch open. You know what I mean? Break fingernails trying to get it under there. Yeah, that's my Rockman story, and I love that thing. Somewhere I bought, like 10 years ago, I rebought the same model. I found it on eBay. And every time I see it, I'm like...
Do you remember going from... Because I remember going from the Walkman to the Walkman CD. And I remember going back to tape for a while. Because, I didn't drive... Before I went in the military, I didn't drive. So I was always on the bus. So I take the bus. So that little thin silver one was the one I had. So I put that in my pack and off I go. Then you buy the CD and you're able to do the same thing. But the stupid thing would move so much. The other ones have this whole anti-twisty shit. I remember going back to tape for quite a while before they got all that kind of crazy stuff. The head management and all that worked out.
So you remind me of one memory. So I also, in the Caribbean, we had a lot more money compared to most folks there. My dad was a naval attaché for the embassy. But I would play soccer in the streets with folks just a few blocks down, and we literally play kick the can. And these are the folks that, like, when we get heavy rains, they would lose family members in the river that was only a mile and a half away. So I used to bring them into the house just as friends. I wasn't supposed to or whatever, but I did. So we'd go to the pool and all this stuff. But anyway, my father got the first CD player in the Caribbean. I was given to him as a gift. And I went in there with my friend Ricardo, and we sat down on the couch, and I hit it on. I bring tears to my eyes. We could not believe the sound clarity. It was like a hologram to us. It was like, how is this sound possible? Like, we were looking behind the speakers. Like, how is this possible? I remember, I forgot that memory until you mentioned the CD thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because as audiophiles, somebody else said they were audiophile too. It's like the search for the sound was enough. Us.
Yep, still is.
The big stereo setups. You'd go over to
the boombox. Yeah. Oh no, the one in the house.
Not just the boombox, but yeah, like that. You'd go in and there'd be two big stereos, and they were up on their own pedestals. Yeah. Like you had to like worship.
I had speakers bigger than my dogs.
Yeah. I still have speakers bigger than my dogs.
And you have big dogs.
I have big
Maybe
dogs.
People don't know that, but we're talking about Great Dane. So those are big speakers.
Yeah.
Maybe one will appear at some point. But,
in my defense, they're actually Infinity reference speakers from the 80s. So yeah, I got a really nice pair of those, and they're actually powered by, I've got monoblocks. So, but they're Adcom monoblocks from the 90s. So I'm not into the new stuff. I love, and it's all 100% completely rebuilt. So those Adcoms, new boards, new caps, new everything in them, the Infinities, new foam, you want to talk about search for the sound? I love that. That's just,
Do you have vinyl records is the question.
So I have not gone that route. I don't have the patience. As daft as it sounds after doing all that, I actually don't have the patience. What I have, and I'll confess to this one, is I run audio software. I actually run iTunes. I also run Cubase, which is another audio streaming, high quality audio streaming system, but I run it through the computer. I have a DAC converter that then goes straight into the monoblocks, and then the monoblocks straight out to the speakers. I
send this to the first person. This is,
we can't see it because you're...
Is that... in my plane of field? It's a record. Oh my God, this is
your background.
It's
so
virtual.
Yeah, so anyway, this is one of my records. I'm gonna send this to the first person right now who can tell me that, other than Chris, who can tell me the name of their favorite amp and speaker combination hi-fi style.
First of all, you had to send me a vinyl last year and you didn't, so you owe me one.
I do. I didn't send that to you. Oh, we went back and forth a bunch of times.
No, that's cool. I'm just giving
probably
you
hard... won't this to you.
I'm just giving you a hard time. I just
give you a hard time. All right. We want to talk records. Hang on.
No, who can tell me their favorite amp speaker combo as a high, as an audiophile? Brand, just brands.
I used to love Technics when I was a kid.
That's what I was going to say.
Acoustic Research.
Oh, AR, heck yeah. That was that was a step up from Technics.
Yeah.
AR, okay. Cody?
Rockford Fosgate in the back of the minivan, come on.
Yeah.
How many of you remember? So this is the original Blade Runner. I've also got the original Star Wars, but
I'm
Laserdisc.
Ah, nice.
The Laserdisc. Oh, one of the
nice.
One of the technology that didn't really
just yeah.
Hey, I have a few picture discs.
Betamax versus VHS. We'll just go there.
I have the synthesizer used for that soundtrack.
Oh no shit.
Yeah, MKS 80.
I was going to say, the synthesizer, that was, I mean, you think about the music in the 80s. I remember, you know, people were just so thrilled in late 70s, early 80s at synthesizers and being able, you know, the first time you could like do a keyboard that was all cats meowing or all, you know, cans or something, and you could play the keyboard and it's all, it was amazing. A friend of mine, he's still a musician, Stephen Merritt, he's the Magnetic Fields, but it just changed the kind of music he started creating at that point. It was amazing because of the technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, awesome. Let's talk about some other. Sean, you have some ideas?
Yeah, well, I have a story. Very, very rare that I have a story. But as I was a teenager, I would ride my bike to school every day, and I don't know, I didn't have a lot of stuff as a kid. But what I did have, I found that I would trade for the stuff that I want. So I'd get a gift. May not be what I wanted, so I'd find somebody at school had something I want, and we'd trade.
It was Scott. He had everything.
So I ended up with this Casio watch. It was an electronic watch that had the Pac-Man game on it. And I loved that watch. I used to get busted for playing in class and stuff, but I couldn't wait to get out of class and start playing this Pac-Man game on my watch. And I started riding my bike home one day, playing the game.
Oh, that's going to go so well.
Right into the back of a semi trailer.
Yeah. Wait. Did the watch broke or
the watch broke? Unfortunately.
Damn it.
Yeah. That's my sad. My heart broke with it. But,
those are some of those are collectible. It's amazing. Look at these days. Or they've Casio with their G-Shock stuff has reissued a whole bunch of those ones.
Yeah. Really?
And I've got a couple of the old calculator ones.
That's the one my dad used to have. You only needed two thumbs because all the keys on the left side were one input, and all the keys on the right were the other. So you can like play the little dot game. Oh my god! Yeah.
That was the original Apple Watch, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it was
the shape crazy. Anyway.
Well, it was when you could see a watch to be more than just telling you the time.
Yeah, it's true.
Right?
I actually have a funny story about that one too, because that watch really brings memories to me. My dad ended up buying one of those for himself, and he got like a really fancy one. And I had no idea about that, right? And he left it in the living room, and I'd go to sleep at night, and the watch would make sounds or whatever. And I was convinced there was a robot in the living room. Now, my imagination was just running wild. I was scared to go and check on the robot. But I was convinced there was a robot because of this watch. Until one day I went... And I saw that it was a watch, and I took it, and I asked my dad if I can, you know, play with it. And my God, that watch was—it's exactly what you're just saying. That a watch is not just for telling you the time; it's like a bunch of stuff we could do with it. It had a calculator, and has games, and has all these other things. So it was definitely a gadget for all, you know.
Well, and you had the sci-fi movies and books where, you know, there's people talking in a watch and you know,
right, yeah, with the, we're calling their car to come, and uh-huh. Now they can actually do it.
Yeah, was the sound that it made just a high-pitched beep beep every hour?
no, it was a little more than that. It had like melodies and stuff. I don't know, it was interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my dad always
had one watch that had melodies for alarms and things. Yeah.
Well, what other hobbies do we have here? Like photography, like they used to be like the Polaroid, the instant cameras, and the first mobile phones, or, well, not even mobile phones. Diana, we have a really nice phone in the back there.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Anybody with a the passion for photography, maybe that has some stories about that, but the old film.
No, dabbled. No. I mean, that was it. No. I think, you know, we probably all of us probably dabbled the one way shape. I remember at school going into the lab and learning how to wash and hang up and all that stuff. Yeah. But I never got into it. I had a couple of Polaroids over the years, but it's one of those things. I even tried with the really nice lenses and all this other kind of crazy ones with some cameras years and years ago, and I just couldn't get into it. Now, with just the ease and simplicity of, you know, holding this thing up and going, hey, and 2 seconds later, you get kind of an amazing picture. It's just made it so, to me, it's made it easier and more accessible and way less hassle. To others, I think it's probably taken it away and all those other things. But for some of us who were never really into that, it definitely has made it a lot more accessible for us.
Well, and it's interesting how things, you know, cycle through and they get old mm-hmm. again. You know, like, so my grandfather wanted to be a cinematographer. When he was drafted, they put down that he was a stenographer, so he never had to see battle, I think, as the story goes. But when he got out of he worked for Kodak and he was selling how to do home movies. So I think this is around like the 50s. He would go around the country and sell home movies. And then we had a whole bunch of these home movies, and it's how do you transfer it? Where were we transferring it? We wanted to get it on VHS because that was so modern. And I remember being so excited. We could actually record people, and we didn't have to have all this big equipment that my grandpa had. You know, we just record people, and isn't this fabulous? And the other day I was cleaning out some stuff and I found a bunch of old VHS tapes, and I'm like, which had been so modern. And there's my best friend's barbecue, you know, Janet's barbecue. I was thinking, how am I even going to, I don't know if I could watch these. Can I transfer them? And if I put them on a CD, that's not going to help. It's got to be ripped to MP4. Or I'm not going to be able. So it's just weird how we get that, how VHS felt so like life changing at the time. And now it's like the dustbin, basically. I don't even know how to watch them.
What do you mean VHS, man? I only had a Betamax.
Okay. You went that yep. route? How did that
we
go?
Went the beta, yep. Dad went the Betamax route too.
Just short-lived. Yeah.
Yep. We followed the wrong path.
So Cody, or anybody else, but Cody, being in the business world, were there any business device? I remember, the Franklin Clever, you transitioned from the big stack book of managing your daily activities to the little PDA device, and then like the Apple Newton. Anybody remember the Apple Newton?
Yeah.
Anything like mm-hmm. that? What do you think, Cody? Anything fun there?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we shifted from Outlook to Gmail, and that was quite...
No. Was that... you're on your way to Lotus Notes?
Yep. On our way to Lotus Notes. No, I don't know. It's interesting hearing some of these projects though that some of you have done, going back to the film, I had a dark room in my high school, and they've converted it now to a computer lab for photography and video editing, because, you know, back then there was no, I think we had Avid systems to do a little video editing, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But they had to have all the space for photography that's totally unnecessary now. I remember, you know, it had one of those cylindrical doors that was all black, and you'd stand in it and you have to spin it around. It looked kind of like if you're beaming up on the Starship Enterprise or whatever, we'd pretend to do that kind of thing in there, and then, you know, it was totally black inside of the room. Anyway, it just kind of makes me think about the space differences, you know, and that are needed with as technology advances, all of this infrastructure that was built to support it, and now it's unnecessary. And so what do you do with the space that was there now? So like in the business world, I guess the thing related to that I would say is, when I started, we had paper records all over the place. So one of my first jobs was in a network of doctor's offices and hospitals, and they had paper charts. They had entire floors devoted to rows and rows of shelves of paper charts and all this. And one of my jobs was to get rid of all of it and convert it all over to an electronic medical record system. And so now all of a sudden there was all this empty space in the middle of the floor, and there were all these people that had jobs, and their job was to pull charts and put them back up, and now they were gone, and there was no need for that anymore. And so it was interesting trying to find places to pivot, you know, the human resources, but then also the the space resources to finding other things to do with all this floor space that they, when they built the building, they'd done that intentionally so that they could fit paper charts in there. And now they didn't need it. And we've got the same issue in my law firm. The floor that I'm on still has a ton of paper files that are all right now being converted to electronic files. And so we're going to be going through the same sort of thing. The story at my firm, I'm not sure if this is true, but the floor that I'm on, supposedly the reason all the paper charts are on my floor is because it has a reinforced floor that none of the other floors have. So it can support all the extra weight from all this, all these paper charts that are there, that, you know, it's just that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of engineering that went into supporting this stuff that's now not necessary. So anyway, that's just sort of what I'm thinking about as you guys are talking.
Well, you can apply that to computer too. I mean, think about the IBM computers that needed rooms that they needed to knock down doors. There are stories that they couldn't fit it in there. And now we're, you know, we got computers that 13 inches is way too big for my desk.
So I'm going to go back. I'm going to tell a little story, and it's kind of leading from the size thing. So my early days in tech were with a landscape construction company, and it was a weird time where they knew they had to go digital, but there were just a crap ton of people out in the field that couldn't go digital. So architect designs and draftings and everything were all on physical paper, like big, huge sheets, right? Say, this is where the landscape is, the trees go and all the grass grows and all the headers go and all this stuff, right? But they knew they couldn't manage all of that with physical paper forever. So we had these huge CAD tables where we'd bring in these huge, gigantic papers of landscape drawings, and we would take those and manually translate all that data into a digital file that we could then use to run the project with. And so it was this big CAD table with a wired pen that we would outline all the grass area and count all the trees and everything. And it was pretty cool for the time, but obviously the ultimate goal was they'd have no paper. The point is, gigantic table, gigantic paper, everything's small now. And I don't, to bring it and even further back and playing on the miniature thing, I don't know if anybody has kids or nephews or nieces that had the little digital pets, the Tamaguchis or whatever they were called. You remember those things where you had to feed it and keep it alive?
I had one. Yeah.
You had one as well?
Yeah.
I killed a few.
We had one. Yeah. We didn't have nieces and nephews. We had them ourselves.
Anything else like that?
I think there is a version of that now on as a video game. Or it's something you can bring in your phone and you do the same thing. You have to feed it. You have to do all the things. And it's probably going to turn into an hologram really soon and virtual reality and stuff. So what I like to do is to kind of run this perception that we had about technology back then when, I mean, everything that is new is somehow magic. Right, you don't know how it works, and then eventually you become a hacker and you break it apart and you figure it out. But as a kid, I'm just thinking, you know, just the music coming out of the radio, which has been around since, you know, the early 1900 and the late 1800, it was still magical. I mean, when you experience something the first time, and you can talk about TV. I mean, I remember watching the TV going from black and white to color. I mean, how cool was that? I'm just kind of wondering, like, you know, the things that we give for granted nowadays, we need to look back when they were not. I mean, take the speed of the internet right now, the connection, the bandwidth. Yeah. I mean, the old dial-up modem, who hasn't told their mom to not get the phone or make a phone call while I was connected and try to download an email that would take 20 minutes.
Well, I mean, we're in it. When you think about it, the fact that there's, what, 7 of us on a conference call, all able to visually see, talk, listen to each other without hidden sets being, you know, I mean, to Diane, you know, Diane's sitting there with a telephone. I might go grab mine in a second for the same reason, because, I mean, you think about going back to those times, even the early days of the cell phones. I mean, you were lucky if the call finished. if it was local. If it was international, good luck on the darn thing. You went through four or five of them.
True.
You could definitely talk to one person. Conference call? What the heck is a conference call? Good grief alive. You know, we've gone from that. We've got communication, just simple communication has now gotten to such a point that we can get people from all across the country, all across the world into one place like that. And we don't think about it. We don't give a consideration for how the hell this works. How is this data doing what the hell this data is doing? How am I able to see Diane? How am I able to see you guys? Effectively, and the amount of tech that it takes for this to happen.
So the thing that I remember, like this moment that I thought like, oh, now I'm really like, this is amazing. This is like the coolest moment in my life, was that I had a Palm Pilot, and Palm Pilots were great, but they didn't connect to anything, but they came out with a modem attachment.
Yes.
And it's, you kind of like coupled it right on the bottom, and I got it right before I went to Las Vegas for the first Black Hat conference.
First
Black Hat with all the cool Black Hat people, right? And I went back to my hotel room after everybody was talking, and I coupled my modem on and I plugged it into to the RJ11 in the hotel room, and I could get my mail. And I was like, coolest. Like, I thought it was the
liberated. Virtual. Liberated, like, right? Like, yeah.
That wasn't that long ago. It was like, I don't know,
99 or something. So my dad tells a story with five North Koreans and the look on their face when they thought they saw reality when it really was magic. So fake news. So I think it's 1981 or 80 or 79 or something like this. And my dad was in Korea. I was living in Korea too. My dad used to go to the DMZ where they'd sit the South and the North Koreans across the dividing line in the middle of the table. And he ran point on a bunch of stuff. But one of the things he did one time when they went at right when the both sides were almost their closest, best relations during his tour for Christmas, he showed them a preview, just the trailer of Star Wars. He put it on a little TV, and the room, you know, the Western side was like, this is amazing. The North Korean side did not say a word. Their faces were turning white. One guy grabbed the other guy's knee, which body language wise, North Korea, you would never do as a soldier ever. They thought that the reason we were showing this was to tell them the technology that we had already built. And it was a negotiation tactic from the get-go. Yeah. That's what they thought. And we had destroyers in space with like lasers and X-wing fighters. Like, it literally blew their minds because they'd never seen. They were not allowed to see media or movies at all. Only propaganda movies were only news of the leader.
Oh my God.
Black and white. This was a color trailer, like Technicolor or whatever, you know. They didn't even believe that it wasn't real. They didn't believe that it wasn't real. Not, you would think that they wouldn't believe it was real, but they couldn't believe that it wasn't real.
The thing about the special effects in the original Star Wars weren't really that great, too.
But they were great for the time. Like, I mean, cool. Look, okay. I go back and look at 80s movies. Not too long ago, I watched E.T. And I'm like, I have to put myself into that mindset of when that movie was made. So with what was available, sometimes I do that when I read a book too. I mean, if you read a classic book from, you know, the 1800s, the language and the description of things, I mean, you really have to put yourself into that. So, I mean, the Scott story is, you could sell magic if you go back in time or go to a tribe where time stopped. I'm not comparing North Korea with that, but the idea is that, you know, you could sell magic for real pretty easily.
Medicate Yankee in King Arthur's court.
Yeah. So here's the other stuff. One. It's interesting where we've gone from tech. We've gone away from it, and now we're going back to this. So back to the audio conversation that we were having. You know, you look at the early days of audio. We talked about it very first second ago. We talked about the early radios, the beautiful tubes, the tube radios. And then everybody went to the boom boxes, the digital boxes, the streaming TV and streaming audio and all that shit. Yeah, there's still so many people who go actively out there. I'm one of them that goes out there looking for the tubes to put into an audio stream to bring that warmth and love back into it. And to me, it's interesting how we turned our back to some degree on some of this technology We turned our back on it, and then we came back to it because we realized what we were missing.
It just made me think that I have a show and tell too. This is a 1943 radio.
Beautiful.
With the tube and everything.
It's freaking tubes. Yeah.
Love it. You can't hear much in LA because it's only AM. So
yeah.
But just when you turn on and slightly start the lighting, it's just magic. You know, yeah. It's just magic.
I was gonna go get it and show you guys, but I can't because it's too precious and I have too much plugged into it right now for a patch. It's a synthesizer from Russia, and it's about this big. It's hand built and it's got 12 tubes along the top.
Oh.
I think there's 12. And he ships the tubes, each one wrapped up. They're all like new old stock, the best of the Russian tubes. Yes. And it's a synthesizer, full on synthesizer. This oscillator, the filter, the envelope, the output VCA at the end, all of it is tube. And it sounds like nothing else in 20 years of producing music I've ever, and I'm addicted to it. Nothing else gets any attention. That's why I'm not going to bring it up here, because I've got my whole studio centered around it as a heartbeat now.
Yeah, yeah.
Dudes are unreal, man.
Yeah.
So one thing that I have a question, because it kind of went in a different direction than what I envision about, you know, gadgets and stuff. I mean, we're talking about some serious stuff, but Diana, I'm going to go back to your revelation and about a connected world. At that point, we were connected, as we say, by a phone line. You know, sometimes we're working, sometimes wasn't. It was all about having the actual wire, the TV. You kind of know how it works, even if it was called the magic box or something like that. But maybe these being connected, the internet, the Internet of Things and the connecting the world, wasn't maybe the biggest, the social change, let's say, that technology brought to our society. I'd like to have your opinion on this. Like, is it more the object or the media that is making us who we are now?
I've always thought it was about being connected. I mean, when I got on the DARPANET in the 70s, that's what wowed me. I mean, the technology was definitely very cool, and obviously I cared a lot about the technology, but the really deep in my like bones excitement was I could talk to people that were in the UK. I was on the East Coast of the US. I could talk to people in California. And in the late 70s, that was just cost prohibitive. You couldn't do that any other way. So to bring and then get these ideas and, well, what are you working on? And what are you doing? And it was just, it blew me away because we were at that time, it was, you know, letters. It took a long time. And the phone was really expensive. And when you got out of your calling circle. I think it's all about connection ultimately, and the technology is amazingly cool, as Chris has been talking about, but it's, I think, what really is why we use it and why it's thrived is the connection.
Well, I want everybody else to jump in on this
too. Yeah, yeah,
I'm gonna throw a spanner in the works here. So for me, it'd be, yes, I appreciate the connectivity, but I think it's the experience that I might get from the connectivity, but also just from using the device or using the technology or seeing what it produces, kind of to your point, Marco, right? That experience of plugging in that radio and it warming up to the point where you get to enjoy it. And Scott, that your synthesizer, it produces and gives you an experience that you're not able to reproduce with other things. So I'm wondering who else has different perspectives on what makes those things of yesteryear nostalgic to us?
I'm going to add to Diane's. I think Diana hit it right. I mean, she hit it perfectly. So perfect example, Limo. The ability to actually connect with somebody who's not in the same country, who's I would never have connected with probably in a normal, daily, everyday, regular life. The ability to actually hang out with people in 20, 30, 40 different countries in one system. You know, and I love it for good or for bad, like between LinkedIn, WhatsApp, and Signal and stuff. I can talk to people all over the world and I can share thoughts and share ideas. I can expand what I see of the world and take on everybody else's idea. And to me, that to Diana's point, the ability now to from going to be able to do that, I can't think of a better way of explaining it. It's just so amazing to be able to do that.
Cody, what do you think?
Well, as Sean was describing, you know, what I kind of missed of yesteryear, I was thinking through what I used to like about technology, and I don't get to experience this anymore. And it reminds me of some sayings, but it was, you know, back then it took effort to get things to work. And so when you finally got something to work, you felt this tremendous sense of accomplishment and investment of time with whatever it was. And now you can just buy a product and turn it on and it does everything you want it to do. And so, you know, like, cell phones are sort of throwaway sorts of things. I still have that stupid Epson computer in my garage. I don't know why, but I've got it because, you know, I've got some connection to the amount of time I spent on that thing just trying to figure out how the thing worked. And now with any, you know, new laptop, who cares? I'll just get a new one. I don't feel that sort of attachment. And I don't think it's a completely nostalgic thing. I think it's more of a lot of it is that I put effort into figuring out how this worked. I'm not going to get rid of it. I don't know. That's sort of maybe how I feel about some of this.
I love it. I think it's about being human and having that actual connection with that product.
No more.
You know what makes me think of nostalgia when it comes to those things is, back in the day when I was younger, I was one of those people who really liked to write letters. I do it to this day. I write letters to people and send them. And when the internet came around, it started being like you're actually doing the same thing, but it's all that much easier and expanded. And it's funny, but to this day, sometimes when I get an email from someone I really care about, I still get that feeling of like that, you know, getting a letter in the mail. I don't know. It's just, to me, that was very special, that when it started becoming a way to talk to people. And for a very long time, I used to live abroad and away from my family. So my family lived in Israel and I lived in Canada, which was pretty, you know, far away. In the beginning, it wasn't that evident for everybody to have, you know, access to computers and internet all the time. I most of the time had it at work or at school or whatever. And I used to still send letters. I'd send stuff until, you know, slowly and surely it started taking off, where it became a consistent thing that you could communicate with your loved ones a lot more easily, and within, you know, instead of a letter taking a few days or a week to get to the destination, get it instantly. So that was, you know, always reminds me of that period of how things started to really change.
I feel that way about what Dana said at the beginning. I think we've all hit on the same theme, Dana, which is it is about that connection, right? So even as a gamer in early 90s for me, or mid 90s, I only gravitated towards the games where it was multiplayer. As soon as that became a thing, I never went back to a single, I couldn't stand doing anything. And a lot of my friends did, but I had to do a game where I could chat with somebody and interact with another human being. I did not care about defeating a developer anymore at that period. My imagination was no longer to go back to cyber, whatever that game was, where it's like you're driving on a road, you know, and it's pre-scripted. I could not do it again because I experienced a connection with a human being. I was like, this is amazing. I could game.
That was actually something that I don't play many game anymore. I mean, sometimes just on the arcade or whatever on the Apple thing, but EverQuest was the game that blew my mind because of that reason. And I was literally addicted to that shit. I mean, I was not sleeping. It was like living in another world, interacting with people. And I said to myself, I got to stop this because I'm not working anymore. I mean, I'm becoming addicted to this thing. But that was amazing.
You would either get married or divorced because of that game.
But you know what? If you think about it, so I'm going to try to connect the two things. So on one side, it's wonderful to be connected really fast. You know, there's the internet. I can be here right now and talk. On the other side, we're human. We need this interaction, and we've seen it even more now with the lack of it, physical interaction. And in EverQuest, it's kind of funny because you were using that medium, but we were doing very human things. You were building things. You were exchanging money. You were going on a quest together with others, and you were sorting out the different characters and the different skills. And so it's kind of like, I feel like we need both at this point. Let's not forget the cool stuff that we build, that we learn, and let's use technology when it's needed. But let's still send the letter. I love that.
Is there a danger too to this? Because I mean, COVID is a outlier. Let's hope, or maybe it's forever. Who knows? But I guess what I'm saying is, like, my dad lost his sense of taste and smell during this thing, right? Completely three months ago now. He's not coming back, the doctor says, right? But what I noticed about my dad, he's been super depressed and very lonely, even though he lives with my mom still, luckily. I feel like when we're here with this, we're missing like the olfactory and also kinetic touch, whatever, what's that word for affection or whatever, touch with our friends. Mm-hmm. Like, it's way different at DEF CON versus like virtual DEF CON, isn't it? Like this last year was really weird. It's like you're there, but you weren't. I hope we don't all go into our virtual bubbles as a result of like the pandemic, and but we might be forced to. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, there's a danger to like our minds being so focused on what we see and hear only, versus kinetic and pheromones and affection and all the stuff, the other stuff that makes us human, right?
Yeah,
even amongst friends. You know, not just
all the augmented reality, virtual reality, and all the tactile that they're trying to develop now into not only gaming, but also like in kind of teleporting yourself with your avatar somewhere. And I'm sure Chris is going to have something to say about this, but I'm like, should we draw a line here, or is this just the future? And this is just the way that we are. That our evolution is working as human being.
Yeah. For those watching, Diana's avatar had to run to another meeting. So
she couldn't clone herself.
Not in time for this.
Working on it. it's you know, it's tough though, because I got to be honest, there is a large part of me that actually enjoys that solitude, that actually is actually happy. Because I mean, it's work for me to interact physically with other people. I mean, DEF CON, perfect example. I'll just go hide sometimes because I can't deal with other people. I just, you know, I'm out of people juice, as I like to put it. Sometimes it doesn't take long. And these last, got to be honest, apart from some family stuff where it's like, fuck it, I wish I could travel. Apart from that, I've actually enjoyed not traveling. I've actually enjoyed hunkering down and spending more time, you know, more time tinkering with audio, more time tinkering with watches, more time, you know, looking at me as a human and going, I've picked up books, you know, rather than, I've got an iPad that probably has a couple of hundred books on it, and I read through them and I'll do that stuff. But I've actually gone back, I've picked up watch magazines. I've actually picked up a magazine and I read through the physical magazine. It's something I haven't done in years. So it's actually been, for me, I've got to be honest, for me, I've kind of enjoyed lockdown to some degree. Not all of it, but I've enjoyed being able to take that step back from the physical. I mean, I'm still doing a ton of these, but being able to take that step back and actually kind of like breathe a little bit more.
Mm.
And Marco, this is kind of a precursor to another episode we're thinking about doing based on that article I wrote, or that piece I wrote a while back, where in the future, we're going to look back on the things that we enjoyed that are no longer there and really, really want them. And when they do exist, the idea in this piece I wrote is that we'll want them so badly, we'll pay a premium to get them. Right. Yeah. And to your point, Scott, getting those tubes, probably not a cheap thing, right? But it's worth it to get that experience. And I think we're going to do a whole episode on that, but I'm wondering how, I don't know where you want to take this, Marco, but the idea, I think, initially was, do we see the next generations having the same views we do, looking back on these things? Or is everything just going to be a wash? It's all tech. It's all fancy.
Well, my big question, and I'd like to hear, you know, everybody's, maybe as a closing or for this conversation, and of course, we just freestyle here, but my idea was, it's important to look back because in a way, not only we're able to appreciate what we have now, the technology that we have now, but we also grown up without this kind of technology, right? I mean, we can talk about the rotary phone. We can talk about a black and white TV, the radio, the synthesizer, the speakers, all of that, when the music wasn't necessarily digitalized and so forth. And my big question is for the future is, if you think in 30 years from now and generation that they grew up with a smartphone, what kind of appreciation are they going to have for these things that are already kind of like not really tactile or enjoyable or something that, as Cody said, you just spend time in building these things and figuring it out?
Yeah, well, they have the emotional investment.
Well, we'll have to do this again in 30 years, but I don't know what you think about this.
So for me, it would be discovery. So for me, the analogy is watches. And Scott, I mean, audio comes into this one as well. You know, I grew up 70s, 80s. So when you think about it, early days of the Casio watches, early days of the digital Seiko watches, the quartz revolution came along not long after I started looking at the things. And blue arguably almost killed the entire mechanical watch industry, like almost killed it.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
However, there was an appreciation for it. People took a step back. When our generation, who grew up on that cusp, turned around and said, hey, I'm really interested in a mechanical watch. I mean, I'm wearing a nice one now. I'm really interested in that mechanical watch. I have a bunch of others. We took that time to take that step back and look back and go, wow, what was going on then? And we learned about it. We understood it. We realized it. The audio, to me, arguably is the same thing. It's, we take that time. And my hope is the next generation would do the same thing. They'd be like, okay, here's where we are. How did we get here? Am I interested in it? And maybe some will and some won't. Some won't care. Same as where we are now. Some don't care. Some will care. And to me, I think it will still preserve that. So I still think there's plenty of hope. And I still think there's going to be people in 30 years' time who are going to look at that radio of yours and go, that is beautiful. Right. That is amazing. And the sound and all those things. So I think there is definitely still going to be that.
Yeah. And there is people going back to restoring record players and restoring and, you know, listening to cassette and stuff like that. So who's next?
I was going to say audio is a good analogy here, Chris, because and the CD player story you told is different than the one I told in almost divergent ways. But here's the interesting thing I noticed just as an artist when you're producing is there are some producers that want to produce certain genres of music, for example, in the box, all digitally from get-go. And some have tried that, like I did for 4 years before I said, this is stupid, I'm going back to hardware. And what's interesting is distortion, as an analogy, is interesting to the human ear and mind, and different types of distortion, tube versus VCA versus, you know, geranium, etc. All of these are different to the ear. And when you present a very perfect signal to the mind these days, it's not very interesting. Yeah. It's almost like we're looking for something to break up structure.
The reality. Maybe it brings you back to reality, right?
Life. Imperfection,
yeah. Cody, how about you? Gonna take a shot?
Well, I think of Back to the Future Part 2, where they're in the 80s cafe, and then Marty McFly is playing the shooting gallery game, and the kids are like, oh, you have to use your hands, is this a baby's game? It gets me thinking about like devices like cell phones and things like that. I don't know that we're gonna have things that you carry around and touch you know, for much longer. I look at my kids, and you know, we've got Alexa all over the house, and they're always just running around yelling, hey, play this, do this, whatever. and they don't have to touch anything or carry it around or pick anything up. And I don't know. I think that there may come a time when people become nostalgic for having anything to touch, because we may be wearing it, or it may just be embedded in stuff all around us. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think so too. I think that all these devices we have now are just going to disappear into our bodies or into the environments we're in.
Which scares the hell out of me.
I mean, I saw that. There was this movie. I think it was the newer version of something called Blade Runner. Like, I don't know, one of those movies. And, you know, people had like their cell phones and stuff already embedded into their hands or, you know, their arms and stuff in there. So I do see it as eventually becoming stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think the human psyche is capable of evolving to a point where we don't need or value our bodies. I hate to say that. But I think the human mind itself is dangerously capable of doing that. And the word dangerous is my opinion. It's not a true statement. But for somebody else, it could be nirvana. Somebody who's paralyzed in a wheelchair, or somebody who just doesn't value this physical experience. But there's no really wrong or right to it. If you kind of extract up to an evolutionary perspective and stare down back at the human race, we're doing weird evolutions right now, like quantum leap evolutions. But I don't think there's any fundamental reason why our brain can't evolve to continue consciousness without the body at all.
I have one of my parting comments that I have on a number of my talks is, you know, I am looking to retire one day to an AS400 in New Zealand somewhere.
For that,
yeah. We'll get something that should work.
We did a podcast about that. Yeah. If people want to hear it,
yeah. Well, at least the damn thing's reliable most of the time. That's the whole logic. At least, you know, when you turn it on, the bloody thing should actually work for more than 5 minutes, which is, you know, better than most systems, unfortunately. But it is that. It's definitely that. There is definitely a part of me that is intrigued to see if I can get to a point. I mean, I'm building stuff here at the moment where I'm pulling signals out of the brain, and I've got a predictive engine that I'm using that now knows when I want a cup of tea, it now knows when I want a drink, it now knows when I want food. I'm building it to replicate me. That's what I'm building. I'm working on that, and I'm having fun doing it. At some point, I want it to be me. 10, 20 years, 30 years down the line. And then I want to see it too. But I've got the morbid fascination, but also that, oh shit, what the hell are we doing?
True. I was going to say, the interesting thing here is we, except for this last little bit, we didn't really talk much about security and privacy and risk or any of that stuff, right? We were just living. We were just living. And the other thing that I think is interesting to me is we talked about a lot of different things from different vendors from different parts of the world. Right, that we got to experience in the form of gadgets and audio and visual and all this stuff. And Chris, your point where it's you defining and building that version of yourself that I think is cool. The question I have is when it's, and I'm going to leave this on the really dark side, Mark, you're going to love this. If it's only a handful of organizations that define who we are in the next 50 years and how we are to operate together and individually, that's where I get a little nervous.
You're going to have to leave it to a big question there. And I'm happy to have another conversation and go totally bonkers on that.
And it's, you know, what's scary about that, Sean, I have to say, is it's not about the people in those organizations or their CEOs. There's decisions that are bad that they make all the time, but that's not it. The scary thing is that this is all in motion, regardless of who the personalities are involved at this, it's algorithmically driven. It's architected in a way that works with maximum efficiencies. There's just in time delivery aspects. There's so many reasons why there's no way to unfuck that. Like, we're going there, whether we 6-7 people have an opinion about it or not.
Yep.
And it's not about the personalities in those organizations. You know, it's not like big evil corporation persona. It's here we go.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now that is called The Future is Faster Than You Think. And it's all about convergence of technology that allow, it's not just one technology that allow cars flying, but it's the convergence of many of those. And it's, and you know, you can always see the dystopia of it, and you can always see the utopia. So I'm always bouncing between, oh, that's cool. I'm like, oh, that's scary as shit. So with that in mind. Yeah, that's the crazy thing, and we'll have many, many more conversation about this. So, Sean,
yep,
is that dark enough for you? Or
that's dark enough. I think we'll leave it that nice shade of black gray.
Yeah, it's what we make of it.
Yep, pleased that we have an opportunity to have another conversation. We certainly will. I know we want to talk about the future and then the additional nostalgic view of the future. How much will we want yesteryear? So I'm looking forward to that one. Awesome. Namor, Cody, Shaggy, Chris, and Diana, you left. Really cool to have y'all on, as always. Any more conversation?
Yep.
Thank
always
you.
Nice
Thank
to you. Count on very smart friends that are willing to sit down and think deep about what could be and what it was. and how we're human in this technological world. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and the story made you think, then share ITSP Magazine with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our columns. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.